There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Book Off, debating the best of the book world.
So for Book Off, we have Mandalal, who stayed on with us, and we have Alison K. Williams, who is a writer and an editor. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. Great to be back.
And Rachel, who's on the other side of the studio today, out of her co-host chair. What we're going to do is we're going to be pitting three villains against each other. You're each going to be telling me, and the listeners more importantly, why you think that they are the best villain. And at the end, I'm going to make a judgment call on it. And I'm not looking forward to making the decision, but it has to be done. So to kick off, I'm going to ask you all to tell me the name of your villain, and then we'll go around again and ask for a little bit of information about who they are and very briefly why you think they are villainous. So Rachel, who have you got?
I have got Mrs. Coulter from the Northern Lights trilogy.
Man?
I have the Snow Queen from the Narnia series.
And Alison?
Amy Dunn from Gone Girl.
Okay, Rachel, why Mrs. Coulter and who is she?
Well, Mrs. Coulter is the kind of villain in the Northern Lights trilogy. And I think when it comes to being the ultimate literary villain, there is no other, basically. She kind of combines all the villain stereotypes, the sort of wicked witch, the evil stepmother. But she's also got a twist in that she's kind of fairy godmotherish as well. And there's that kind of Darth Vader element of, I am your mother, coming later on, which is just perfect. And to me, she's particularly scary because she hides her inner evil behind this beautiful facade. And so she's described in the book as a beautiful young lady whose hair falls shining delicately under the shadow of her fur-lined hood. And she kind of uses this beauty and charm and charisma to lure all the children that she's going to abuse and torture later on. And in The Golden Compass, she's played by Nicole Kidman, and you don't get much more beautiful than that, but with these kind of hidden depths. And it's not just me that thinks she's the best literary villain. In the world of Meg Metatron in The Amber Spyglass, he says that she's all about corruption and envy and lust for power, cruelty and coldness, a vicious probing curiosity, pure poisonous toxic malice. You have never from your earliest years shown a shred of compassion or sympathy or kindness without calculating how it would return to your advantage. You have tortured and killed without regret or hesitation. You have betrayed and intrigued and gloried in your treachery. You are a cesspit of moral filth. Beat
Ooh.
That.
Okay.
Great line.
That's all good. Right.
Okay, well,
or rather, that's bad.
Bad.
Very
evil.
Bad.
Villainy at its finest there. So, Alison.
Well, let me start by saying I'm going to spoil Gone Girl for you. But on the other hand, if you haven't seen it yet or read it yet and you know the story now, you'll get to watch all of the machinations with the pleasure of knowing what's really happening. So Amy Dunn is a New York writer forced by her husband to move to Missouri, which I think we all agree is grounds for, you know, evilness right there. And what I love about Amy is she plans her own murder incredibly cleverly, frames her husband for it, and then when her plans change, she's able to improvise, kill another guy just because it makes a better story, and get back to her husband. And at the end of it all, not only does she live and walk away, which none of our other villains do, she gets what she wants. She actually says, the man he was pretending to be, the guy who Nick was pretending to be on TV to look like the, you know, distraught husband, women love that guy. I love that guy. That's the man I want for my husband. That's the man I signed up for. That's the man I deserve. And at the end of the book, Nick realizes that Amy has manipulated him into a position where not only can he never leave, he's actually glad to stay. He says, I was a callow boy and then a man, good and bad. Now at last, I'm the hero. I'm the one to root for in the never-ending war story of our marriage. It's a story I can live with. I can't imagine my story without Amy. So I love that she does tremendous acts of evil in service of great selfishness to recraft her life in the way that she wants to live this wonderful fairy tale life that she believes she deserves, and she gets it. She wins. She walks away.
Okay. Amy Dunn from Gone Girl. We've had Mrs. Coulter from the Northern Lights trilogy by Philip Pullman. Mann.
So my villain is the Snow Queen, or the Queen from the Narnia series. And I think for many children, she's the first real villain we encounter. Because I think before The Magician's Nephew, which is the first book from the Narnia series where she appears, we're kind of used to more sort of flat, comical type villains. But she is really evil on a, I think, an epic level. I'm going to start off by just reading the first time she was ever mentioned. And for those of you who don't know, these two kids, Polly and Diggory, end up in this world called Charm, which is like a dying world. And they end up in this hall where there's all these statues of these great kings and queens, very beautiful, very, you know, giant kings and queens. And as they walk down the hall, the people become have more solemn, scarier, uglier faces. And at the very end is this queen. And she's described as... the last figure of all was the most interesting, a woman even more richly dressed than the others, very tall, but every figure in that room was taller than the people of our world, with a look of such fierceness and pride that it took your breath away. Yet she was beautiful too. Years afterwards, when he was an old man, Diggory said he had never in all his life known a more beautiful woman. So, first of all, she's incredibly beautiful, kind of like Mrs. Cloutier, but she, as soon as she wakes up, you kind of sense her evilness. She destroyed the world that she comes from with simply one word. She was in a huge war against her sister for them battling for the country of Charn. And when she was about to lose, she knows this secret magic world that would destroy everyone around her and keep her alive. And she put herself in this sort of like slumber sleep when she was, and then when she was awoken, she got to two other worlds that she also attempted to destroy and ended up in Narnia. And she was the very first evil person in Narnia and managed to gain immortality. And I think she's the only villain I know of who becomes more evil and transforms in her evilery. Is that a word? In her
villainy.
It is ability? Now. I like evilery.
That her looks change and she becomes more evil. And what's so interesting about her, I think, that's really evil is that she's incredibly practical. Is that as soon as she wakes up, she knows by instinct who will benefit her and who won't. So when she wakes up, she disregards Polly, the little girl, because she knows she's of no use to her. But she instantly is interested in Diggory because he's the one who came into her world and she knows that she can leave with him. And as soon as he's of no use to her, she just ignores him and moves on to the next person. So she's described as being incredibly practical and charming and cold-blooded. I mean, she created 100 years worth of winter in Narnia. And then after that, she lived to be 1,300 years old, continuously just creating havoc. And can I just also add that she is part giant and part djinn? So she's not even human.
So you're saying that she automatically trumps all other levels?
Yeah.
Now, see, I would argue with that.
Because, see, I would say that in that case, she's kind of got a handicap head start, whereas both of our villains were human, and they accomplished great havoc and great destruction and great harm to all the people around them without the help of magic powers and an army of werebeasts.
Yeah, but are you saying that evil is inherently human, or is evil otherworldly? If we're talking about evil being otherworldly, pure evil, then technically the Snow Queen should win because she is not really human.
But the effort involved in being evil is more if you're human than
is
if you
it?
Have all these powers.
I think so.
I think you have higher expectations for yourself if you're out of this world human. Not human, I mean.
Okay, how about we put the boxing gloves down momentarily?
Book Off, debating the best of the book world.
Debating the best of the book world today, we have Rachel Hamilton, who's abandoned her co-host post, and she's now on the other side of the desk. We've got Amanda Lal as well, and Alison K. Williams, all wonderful bookworms and readers. Alison's also a writer and an editor. Man, you're also a writer of journalistic things. See, I've lost the capacity of the street. Journalistic things. And Rachel is a children's author. Childish things. And we are in the middle of debating the best of villainy. The best villains in literature is the debate at the moment that we're in the middle of. So Rachel's just been talking about Mrs. Coulter. She's the villain that Rachel is defending as the best in all of literature from Philip Pullman's or the worst yes of Philip Pullman's Northern Lights trilogy. Mandelal is defending the Snow Queen or the White Witch from the Chronicles of Narnia by C.S. Lewis, and Alison K. Williams is defending Amy Dunn as the best villain in literature from Gone Girl, and she's already told everybody that that's a spoiler, but it's been out for long enough now, so just get over it. Gender. I want to talk about gender and the fact that you've all chosen women as your villains, and I just want to put this question to you, whether you think that that is an integral part of their villainy, whether you think that women, well, female characters anyway, in books that you've read have a greater capacity for villainy because of maybe their charm, or whether you think that it's balanced equally and that it doesn't matter whether they're male or female.
You know, I think that women end up having to be more devious and having to use charm and manipulation and subterfuge a lot more because most of the time the women are not the ones in charge. They're not backed by an army. They don't have a grand vizier to carry out their deeds. They don't have the weight of the state or the government behind them. They're pretty much having to do it entirely on their own. And I'd say one of the things about Mansville and the White Witch, the reason that she's able to do so many deeds of evil is she ends up controlling the government, you know, and whoever bosses the state gets to decide how everybody lives.
Also, there's physical power as well, in the sense that the White Witch does have this strength that perhaps the others don't have. And I mean, the book itself sort of sums up what you're saying. I was going to say exactly the same thing, in that it talks about how Lyra sees the other kind of female scholars that she meets as kind of peahenish and dowdy, whereas Miss Coulter is sophisticated and sleek and comes across as superior. And so I do think it's harder for women to be evil because they can't physically necessarily overpower people, and so they have to find a way of using their charm.
I don't think these villains are great because they're female. I think that maybe for me, I'm so used to thinking of villains as male growing up, and that when I encounter a female villain, I'm like, whoa, she's really evil. She's worse than a man, because I'm so used to females in literature, maybe in some books, being not the villain. So, but when you actually look at the characteristics that make them villainous, they're all the same whether you're male or female. There's this charm element, there is this determined element, there's this strong motivation, there's this will do anything to get what they need.
There's finding out what people love and threatening to take it away from them.
Exactly.
In a horrible manner.
And I don't think that is particularly male or female. I think at the end of the day, they all have these same goals, and they all go about using whatever skill set they... I mean, there's plenty of female villains out there that are terrible looking. I think we just managed to pick three very beautiful ones. So maybe beauty is a part of evil. I don't know.
But I think that's what makes them fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you're going to be an ugly old witch, you got to have a gingerbread house. You got to have something that lures the people in.
Yeah,
there has to be an element
absolutely.
Of charm somewhere, doesn't
but
there?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's interesting because a lot of people told me, oh, you're probably going to pick Voldemort, aren't you? He's the most evil. And even him was very charming and good-looking when he was younger, and that was something that he used to his advantage. And I think actually being good-looking or being beautiful is inherently a part of being a good, very evil villain.
Interestingly, yeah. It's true in real life as well. I worked in a prison for a while, and it was an open prison.
Did you?
Yes. I wasn't a guard. I don't think that'd have been very impressive. I was more kind of doing admin stuff.
Oh, right.
But it was an open prison, so you worked with the prisoners. So I would work in the print room and all this with them. And I can remember saying to the governors, I find it really disconcerting because these men have done horrible, horrible things, but they seem quite nice. If I met them and didn't know what they'd done, I would think they were quite nice people. And he said that is the only way they can do what they do, because they have to lure people in. They don't have gingerbread houses. They have to find a way to fool people to come with them so they can commit these horrible crimes.
Yes. Real life serial killers are often incredibly charming.
The most charming people in the world. Yeah, yeah, it's terrifying.
Even dictators, if you think about them. Tears of the past, always charming. Maybe they weren't
charismatic.
Charismatic, yes. That's the word. Even though they weren't aesthetically, you know, perfect, they were very charismatic.
I think that's one of the things I really like about Amy Dunn in Gone Girl, is she takes this traditional picture of womanhood. You know, I'm supposed to support my man and be, you know, always open for romantic relationship and always excited to see him and building this perfect, beautiful life. And she subverts that and uses the tropes of, oh, you're a woman, you're weak, or oh, you're a woman, you're gentle, and subverts those tropes to stage her own death and get what she wants.
Similarly with Mrs. Coulter, she commits evil, but by using things in other people that aren't particularly nice. So for example, mm-hmm. when Metatron, he sees this cesspit of moral filth, and yet straight after he's done this sort of deep analysis of how horrible she is, he says that but you're so beautiful, you're so lovely, I want you to be my consort. And you're like, ugh.
See, this is why the Snow Queen is different. She's not really charming in the sense that she's trying to, I mean, except for the Turkish delights, she kind of just orders people and expects them to do what she wants, and there's no buts, maybes, nothing. She just do it or you're dead. That's it.
I know I shouldn't be helping you, but I did notice something there. When you said that using people's weaknesses to get what you want from them, that's something that she does with Edmund, doesn't she?
With the Turkish delights.
Because she knows what his weaknesses are, that he feels mm-hmm. outcast, he feels different from his friends, from his mm-hmm. siblings, and she preys on that, doesn't she?
But not for long, and I wouldn't say that that's something that is inherently a part of her character. I think she does specifically with Edmund because at that point she knows that if him and his brother and his sisters end up doing what they need to do, then it will be over for her. So it's kind of like her being charming is her last
defense.
See, I think she's cunning, but she's not all that smart. Because in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, when Aslan sacrifices himself, she doesn't get that that's not going to let her win, and she's not able to improvise when her plan goes awry.
Yeah, but
she's got brute force.
Yeah,
force and not enough thought. I would agree.
But I think all villains have a weakness. All of them, right,
yes.
Guys?
Yeah. But that's kind of what makes them. A
I don't
great
know, man.
Villain.
Amy wins. Amy wins, and she gets the last word at the end of the book. She ends up with a husband, a life, a baby. She's happy.
Well, it makes her kind of an unrealistic evil character, right?
But the weakness often highlights the evil. So, for example, mm-hmm. with Mrs. Coulter, her kind of maternal feelings for Lyra and the fact that she is protecting her highlight how evil what she's doing is, because she is protecting her from the things that she has set up to do to other children. And so then you think, well, that's very cold, that you can recognize with your own child this mm-hmm. is absolutely unforgivable and horrible, but everyone else's child can.
I think go on.
In the end, Mrs. Coulter ends up having a streak of humanity. She sacrifices herself for her own daughter.
That's
so
true.
How deep does the evil really run in her, and how much is it according to circumstance?
And it's not as evil as knowing one word that can destroy the whole world. Imagine knowing this one word that could destroy everyone but yourself, and how evil you would have to be to really decide to use that word to kill everyone.
You know,
that's
I love what
evil.
You say about words, because one of the things that happens near the end of Gone Girl is both Amy and Nick write stories about what happened, and Amy makes Nick delete his book. His entire finished, labored over book, she makes him delete it. And as a writer, I cannot think of anything more evil.
But for a good villain, you need that streak of goodness, because I think, was it Chekhov that said, the best stories are not good versus evil, they're good versus good. And if you can get the reader to empathize with why the villain is behaving as they are, and so there are definite emotional connections with a reader in Northern Lights to Mrs. Coulter, despite seeing everything she does as abhorrent, that makes a great villain, I think.
And I really do think that what makes also a great villain is that they have to have a weakness. They have to have something that you can get at them, their Achilles heel. And I think with the Snow Queen as well, she's just so afraid of dying. And she wants to live forever, and she wants to rule everything. And I think that is... And there are scenes where you see her run away and scared when she first sees Aslan, when Narnia is created. She runs away because she's frightened of him. And I think adding a little bit of human elements makes them more realistic. And if you're a more realistic villain, I think it just makes you more evil.
Can we talk very briefly, we might have to return to it, about motive? Now, I think motive is a big part of what makes somebody a villain. It sets, you know, in the real world, there's a difference between murder and manslaughter. Motive is a very important part of how villainous these characters are. So, Rachel, what is Mrs. Coulter's motive for her villainy?
They're complex. One is a very self-interested motive, which is she should get ahead. So she sort of sides with the magisterial and the kind of church and the strongest entity in the world of the Northern Lights. Equally, you could say that she has convinced herself, because she's fighting dust and self-knowledge and almost like the apple from the tree of knowledge. And she is against that. She doesn't think people should have that. She thinks she wants to create people who just do what's right and don't have all this thought, because that's how evil gets into the world. So you could say she has convinced herself she has a good motive. And then obviously at the end, things change slightly because the maternal instinct kicks in.
Very briefly before I ask you, Alison, about this, we've had a couple of text messages come in. Alex says his favorite villain is Brain from Pinky and the Brain. Small creatures, large world dominating ideas. And then Hans says, well done, Hans, yes. I think that Cersei Lannister at least deserves an honorable mention for female villains. A vicious and cruel, yet complex and motherly. I think there's a lot of similarities there between
Mrs.
her
Coulter,
and Mrs. Coulter.
Absolutely.
So,
one.
Alison, motive.
Amy Dunn wants her husband to be the man that they both want him to be.
That they both want him to be?
Yes. because both of them are unhappy in their marriage. Both of them wish that they could go back to the people that they were when they first met. And she decides that she is going to make him act like the man they want him to be until he actually is.
Man. Ooh.
My Snow Queen's motive is very straightforward. It's world domination. She's cold-blooded. She has
not even world, like universe, galaxy, everything.
She just doesn't, that's all she cares about. She doesn't care about anything else. That's her sole motive in life from the day she was born. She was been bred to take over worlds.
You know how DC had Suicide Squad, which was basically all the villains banding together to fight? Yeah. I just wondered what the kind of Suicide Squad of literature would be and whether you'd end up with maybe the White Queen fighting with Thanos from comics, and then maybe, I don't know, Amy Dunn joining. They all seem a bit self-serving to actually band together.
Self-serving, very loners. They all work alone. They're not a team players at all.
Yeah, would you say Mrs. Coulter is a loner, though?
Yes, internally, but she's learnt because of exactly what Alison was saying. She's learned that she has to manipulate people and make them believe she's working with them. So to an independent observer, she probably seems like a team player, and I reckon she'd be one of the leaders in the Suicide Squad, but she would abandon them all without a thought if it served her self-interest.
So we've spoken about a lot of things. You've been trying to tell me why your villain is the best villain and trying to convince me and the listeners as well. 4001 if you agree or disagree with anything being said today. We've spoken about gender, we've spoken about charm offensives, we've spoken about motive. I'd like us to speak about how those motives are actually executed, what they actually do that is evil, if we can talk a little bit about that. Rachel?
Well, the kind of the worst thing that she does is she's a member of the, what's it called, they're called gobblers, General Oblation Board. And what they believe is they have to splice children from what's known as their demon, which is almost like a manifestation of their soul in animal form. And so what she's doing, and in this world, it's the worst thing you could possibly do, separate someone from their demon. And so that's what she's doing. She's luring children off the street. And she's doing this in order to kind of save the world from original sin and all this sort of stuff. And she recognizes how wrong it is because she saves her own daughter from that happening to her. So that's pretty evil, to do the worst thing that's possible to do while knowing it's a terrible thing to do.
Man.
So like I've said before, the Snow Queen's motive is world domination, and she kind of executes that in a very dictatorship kind of way. So first of all, she uses this word to destroy her own world, which is kind of like an analogy for, like, I guess, bombs and stuff like that. And then in Narnia, she creates this 100-year-long winter. She no one's allowed to celebrate any kind of festivities. Everyone's sort of living in doom and gloom all the time. She makes sure that people who go against her are turned into stone. So she uses her magical powers to turn them to stone. She separates families. And all for what? There is no reason to do it. She's not really gaining anything. She just wants to... she has this obsession with controlling everyone and being loved, continuously loved, like this great, you know, statue. You know how you see these great giant statues that everybody kind of throws coins at? She kind of wants to become monumental and iconic through any means necessary.
Now that brings up another question. If I were in the ring with these villains, the one that I would probably have chosen is Iago from Othello, Shakespeare's Othello. I wonder, when you say it's not really clear what her motive is, that's a similar thing.
Motiveless malignancy. That's how Coleridge described Iago, wasn't it? And
yes.
I think that's not a real villain. I think they need to have a reason.
That's the question. And I wonder if anybody listening has thoughts on this as well. Because is it more evil to be evil for the sake of being evil? Or is it more evil to be evil because you're trying to achieve something? But is that not more human? Is it not more of an excuse for the villainy because there is something that you...
A means to an end.
A means to an end. So I'm in two minds about this. You can continue to convince me of your point of view, Alison.
Well, I think Amy Dunn is a classic psychopath. And when she's younger, her parents have made her the star of a series of best-selling children's books, which I think is enough to drive anybody over the edge. But throughout her entire life, she sets up a schoolmate so that the schoolmate looks like she's a stalker. She sets up another schoolmate so that he looks like he's in love with her her and then attempts to kill himself in her room. When she is escaping from her husband, she hooks up with this guy who was her high school sort of boyfriend who kind of had a massive crush on her and takes advantage of that crush to regroup, hang out in his house, and then kill him and frame him for the entire thing. And I think she's just really great at pinpointing people's weaknesses and then making elaborate plans. You want to strand me out in Missouri as a housewife with nothing to do? Fine. I'll spend the entire year writing a fake diary and crafting my own murder and then making it look like it's a crafted murder so that the husband gets blamed. You know, I think she's really... She puts so much effort into her evil and her plans are really thorough. And yet at the same time, she's able to improvise on the spur of the moment. At one point during her escape, she gets robbed by people who she didn't really trust to begin with, but she gets robbed and loses all her money, which is when she calls up the high school boyfriend. So she has this incredibly elaborate, well thought out plan, but she's also willing to jump in any direction because she is truly frighteningly intelligent.
Right, we know that she... You were going to say something.
I was going to say, I think that it is clear, actually. Your dilemma, I don't think, is a dilemma. I think evil is something that is a choice or an action, not an is. Because if you are just evil, you're not being evil. You're being yourself. So I think there is no dilemma. I think it has to be someone who is making choices, actions, or decisions.
No, I don't know.
But do they have to know it's wrong? Because I think every villain is the hero of their own story. They're doing what they believe to be right. I mean... Yeah. As far as Jadis is concerned, the White Witch, the world is a better place when it's snowy and gorgeous and who doesn't like snowflakes?
I think the best stories are where they may not know at the beginning and they are the hero of their own story with their protagonist as antagonist. But then I think the best stories of villainy end with an arc where they do realise and they have to make a decision whether to stay evil or turn to
But that's more of an anti-hero, right? That's more of a person that you... Kind of like the Godfather. You know, he kind of thinks he's a hero and he thinks he's saving his family, but by the end of it, he's actually a mafia guy.
I think Darth Vader is an excellent villain because he is sort of an anti-hero, but you still very much consider him a villain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think there is a difference between people, villains who are just being evil for no reason, kind of like the Snow Queen, which I think is more evil, than being a evil person with a goal in mind, because that makes it more... Like you said, there's what is that term that I just used before? An ends to a mean. But if you're just creating evil for no reason, then that technically that makes you worse because there's no rhythm, there's no rhyme. It's just you just have no goal in sight except being evil.
But we don't say a leopard's evil when he eats you. It's just all the leopard knows how to do.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Whereas if a man kills you and eats you, that's evil.
But leopards are kind of cute, right?
I think.
And the White Witch is a very charming lady. You know, I love at the end of Gone Girl when Nick is being very nice to Amy and she says, "Why are you being so nice to me?" And in her head, he's supposed to say, "Because you're wonderful and I love you and you deserve it." But what he actually says is, "Because every morning you wake up and you have to be you."
Oh, chills. I think the tactic here, man, and I'm sorry to see it pan out like this, I think Rachel and Alison are ganging up on you to get you out of the picture.
Yeah. Now that's evil.
Who's the real villain here? Right, so we've spoken about motive. Now, last thing before we wrap up and I have to make my horrible decision is we need to talk about where they end up. Now, we know that Amy gets away with it and that she achieves what she sets out to.
She becomes the happy wife and mother she wishes to appear to be.
Exactly. And I know that Mrs. Coulter and the White Witch do not. Now, one thing that I will say is that the genre for these three sets of books are very different. So Gone Girl is an adult book. It's from a genre where things can go bad for the hero and villains can win. And I'd say that that's less the case for the genre of children's literature.
Mm-hmm. To an extent.
An extent.
But evil should be punished. It's what reassures children that the world is a good place.
However, in the Snow Queen's case, even though she dies, she technically becomes immortal in the sense that nobody forgets her name ever for all eternity. So in a way, her evil kind of lives on because you never forget her name.
And with Mrs. Coulter, she manages to actually do an impressive thing, but does it by convincing Metatron, all-knowing Metatron, how evil she is. That's the only way that she can actually be good at the end. So she does good through evil because she convinces him. he analyzes her, and he's trying to find a source of good in her, and she manages to squash the spark of love that she has for her daughter with the memory of all the terrible, terrible things she's done, and they're so bad that she manages to convince him.
And she says she wishes she'd done more so that she could hide it more. Yeah. Whereas Amy writes her memoir and gets a book tour. I'd call that a win.
This is a very difficult decision. I have a couple of minutes to make the final one. So you have one very quick remark that you can make to sway my decision.
Okay, I would say that pure evil is a choice rather than a state of being. And I think that the more positive qualities a person has, that makes them more evil when they do wrong. So Mrs. Coulter has many of the same qualities as Lyra. She has the intelligence, she has the courage, she has all of these things, and yet still she turns to the dark side, making her the most evil.
I think you have to measure evil by the amount of acts that have ruined people's lives and, in fact, worlds, in the case of the Snow Queen. And I think being born evil and never being able to be swayed, no matter what you see in life, and choosing to continuously do evil, it's pretty horrific. I mean, being cold-blooded, you can never be saved from that. So I think that's pretty evil.
Amy Dunn is a human. She doesn't have magical powers. She doesn't have a magical army. She doesn't have a giant religious and governmental apparatus backing her. She has to do it all on her own with her wits and her cunning, and she is willing to ruthlessly execute innocent people who get in their way, and not just kill them, but make them look like the bad guy and ruin the lives of their family after they're dead.
Okay, I have come to a decision, and it's for a specific reason, a few. So, with Mrs. Coulter, I feel too much the same way about her as I do about Cersei Lannister. I can empathize with the maternal instinct a bit too much. So, Rachel's so sad.
You're out of the running, Rachel.
So. I was out first as well. Not only have I not won, I've lost.
You want to talk evil? I think somebody's getting their tires slashed on the way out of here.
Oh, no.
Man, this is actually a really difficult one for me because I do see what you're saying. I do see the White Queen as a sort of dictator. And in the real world, that is the most evil that you can be. However, for actual enjoying what they do so much and enjoying inflicting pain on other people's lives and how they end up at the end of the story, I'm gonna go with Amy Dunn.
Woohoo!
So Amy Dunn is the winner, although it's very, very, very difficult.
But out of me and Rachel, I'm the winner, right? So that's okay.
I'm the loser, and there's something evil about being the loser.
So best villain goes to Amy Dunn from Gone Girl.
We're applauding villainy.
It's good. Yes.
Yes, there's nothing wrong with that during Ramadan at all. thanks so much to all of you for joining us for our best book off chat. Book off was what the name of the segment was. Clearly, I don't even know what I'm talking about. We decided who the best villain was, but you fought so bravely.
You decided.
Yeah, tough decision, really.
And brilliant competition. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Everybody had really great good reasons. It was fascinating.
If I could have picked all three of you, I would have. But that defeats.
That's because you're not a villain.
Defeats the point of the segment. Thank you so much to Alison, to Man, Rachel. You're not going anywhere just yet.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.